Have you heard of microgrids? It's when homes, streets, communities, they join forces to rely on each other for their renewable energy supply. Here's a little explainer from the documentary 2040.
In Bangladesh, any home with solar panels and a battery is given this box, which allows them to buy or sell energy with another home with the same setup. Together, the homes form a microgrid, which means they can generate energy independently from the main grid. And the money created from the buying and selling of energy stays within the local economy.
You might have heard in the news today that a town in Victoria, Yakandanda, is looking to become 100% renewable. But did you know that the Hunter almost had its very own microgrid community? And I'm not talking about some hippie commune somewhere. This is a big-scale development. And there's also plenty of people here in the Hunter choosing to live off the grid, creating their own mini microgrids. Damien Griffith is the New South Wales manager for Off-Grid Energy Australia and also runs his own farm in the Warrigans off-grid. He writes a blog about his adventures in the world of renewables, and he's talking to me today from the Northern Territory, believe it or not. Damien, g'day, how are you?
G'day, Paul. Yeah, very well. Actually in WA.
Oh, you're in WA, fair. And is that just to consult on microgrids?
I work in the industry, but obviously I live off-grid as well, so I have plenty to do with microgrids and off-grid systems over the years, for sure.
Okay, so is it as easy as just, you know, connecting a few solar panels and, you know, putting a box in between them or whatever?
There's a fair bit of complexity to the design of microgrids on all scales. Of course, you got your sort of really small stuff right up to, you know, what effectively... it could be a town, you know, it can be scalable to anything. But there is quite a bit of complexity in design. It's not quite as easy as simple grid connect solar, that's for sure.
All right, well, let's talk about Huntly, because that's something you were involved in. It was housing development, of course, which is currently being constructed in its various stages. It almost went off-grid, holus bolus, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't think many people would know about that. Now, it was sort of fairly under the radar, but I worked very closely with the general manager of Huntly going back probably a decade now, and our vision was what we could term the autonomous town, effectively closing the loop on the energy system and taking the town off grid. And credit to the developer, they followed through on that process for quite a number of years in the research and development phase, and that followed. So I spent quite a number of years there looking at that, and we got pretty close, I have to say. So it would have been an exemplar and probably a world first to take 7,500 homes off grid. But, you know, there's a lot of red tape, a lot of regulation around, you know, those sort of developments, just as a standard development, let alone trying to push the boundaries and innovation. So we sort of just missed out. Although environmentally, sort of socially and economically, it's stacked up. So some of the legacy stuff that's still there is that Huntly does have a recycled water system, a purple pipe, and there's definitely still some innovation, sort of legacy stuff that they didn't quite get to be off-grid now, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting, Damien. So tell us, what are the various components of these microgrid systems? Are we just talking about photovoltaics and about small wind turbines? Is that how they generally tend to operate?
They generally tend to operate like that in Australia, but, you know, you can have any type of... energy production, included in a microgrid. So in different parts of the world, that might include micro hydro, could include any type of power, like, you know, wave power, for instance, if it was suitable. So a microgrid can use those renewables, you know, and the resources that are available to it. And it's usually, in Australia, we've got abundant PV, so, you know, of course, that's going to be used. And in Western Australia, particularly, it's quite windy, and so wind makes sense over here in a lot of places. And so, you know, but that often it's also backed up by a diesel generator, and then you have your batteries. So the batteries and the controller mechanisms and the renewables generally form the foundation of the grid, and then the generating, the fossil fuel generating capacity can be supplemented onto that either as, you know, a hybrid type system or as purely backup, depending on sort of what the preferences are.
Is it practical for neighbours to start talking about this now, to be thinking about this? I mean, you've put it in the context of a greenfield site becoming a subdivision, and I can see the merits of that. And even if it was five or six houses, you can still argue that there's some economies there. But in developed suburbs now, is it feasible to sort of say, well, okay, come call the company and tell them to come and get the meter because we're looking after ourselves now?
Well, people are doing it. You know, battery technology is still reasonably expensive. So if the decision's based purely on the economics, it takes a lot longer to pay that off compared to, say, just straight grid connect solar. But, you know, the networks have network charges and things like that now. And so as battery technology is becoming cheaper, more and more people are thinking about, you know, hey, can we do this? And indeed, it is feasible. One of the challenges, obviously, in tight suburban areas is looking at how people can back themselves up. And, you know, you don't want generators running under your neighbour's bedroom windows. So you have to think about that carefully and how we deal with having enough capacity to sort of negate that issue in those situations.
Damien, the economics must change a fair bit if you're off the grid as it is anyway. In other words, you're a long way from electricity supply. It must be a totally different equation then, is it?
Yes, very, very different. And then it makes absolute sense quite often, and often a no-brainer. And so in that sort of situation, when you factor in the cost of a grid connection, which can quite often start at $25,000 because a transformer is often around that sort of price, you add in a few poles and wires, it quickly escalates from there into the 30s, 40s, 50s, and, you know, well into the hundreds of thousands sometimes as well. So when you put that up front and you work out how much of an off-grid system you can get for those sort of dollars, or if you have a head start of, say, $30,000 or $40,000 on an off-grid system, then it's definitely a different equation.
Yeah, I remember when my brother did it, I think his numbers were $10,000 per pole, not just for the pole, but, of course, for each additional pole added $10,000 to the cost in wires and installation, of course, and then the transformer, as you say, on top of that, just for a little, you know, single-dwelling farm operation.
Yeah, well, then it really makes sense. And then, of course, you don't have power bills. And the freedom around that is really, really great. And your little story at the beginning there I found quite interesting, because all through the period of those storms, you know, people were having all sorts of challenges without having power. And, you know, it didn't worry us. You know, we had power through the whole bit and off-gridders generally would. In that time, I think we had to use, you know, the diesel backup a little bit to supplement it, because obviously it was quite cloudy and rainy as well. But yeah, for the most part, we were quite functional through that whole period. And you know, there's a certain freedom in that as well, to know that you're sort of in control of your own lot.
Damien, what sort of work's been done on underground thermals and all of, you mentioned a couple of them, you know, wave technologies and stuff from overseas. Is there much prospect for that sort of stuff in Australia? I know in New Zealand there's a fair bit more of it.
Yeah, look, I haven't got the finger on the pulse there too greatly at the moment, but I do know that there's actually quite a vast and significant thermal resource under the centre part of Australia on some really hot rock. It's not the same volcanic resource, but that rock is under pressure in the middle of the continental plate, as I understand, and that has a certain temperature that water can be injected onto to create steam for turbines and whatever else. So, you know, some reading I did a while back suggested that could be quite a significant resource for us. But look, that's something that I read quite a while back, so I think that there is possibilities. But, you know, most of what we're looking at in terms of, you know, resource available to us is above ground. It's shining in the sky every day.
Yeah, fair enough. Damien, nice to talk to you. I appreciate your input today. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Cheers.